Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. It's Friday. Fly Jams Friday coming up a little bit later on. We got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy. All our regular features. We'll find out what's going on Outside the Loop Radio with Mike Steven and Andy Herman. That's coming up as well. But right now, I would like to welcome back to the show one of my favorite guests. He's a regular on the show. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter for about TV, is a pop culture guru, as I like to refer to him, and watches just a lot of TV and knows what he's talking about. And always love to talk about him and talk with him. And with the SAG Awards and the Golden Globe Awards were announced. The nominations were announced this week. And both of those awards ceremonies cover television. So we thought we'd get Dan's view on that and more as we welcome Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter to the show. Hi, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right, man. How are you?
Oh, just swapped with end-of-the-year fun.
Yeah, it gets a little it's a little wacky around this time of year for people in the business that we are in, Dan.
Oh, it really does. Everyone's trying to put together their top 10 lists. Everyone's trying to put together all their lists of the best and worst of the year, all of that stuff. And that makes you have to catch up on everything you haven't gotten to already. It's a full-time job on top of a full-time job.
It's weird because there are... I've seen pretty much every. Well, I haven't seen the Star Wars movie yet, but I don't. But I don't care, so I'm not concerned about that. I know that's sacrilegious, Dan. I'm sorry, but it's not possible for me. Yeah, I just don't care. But I have not. The two movies that I have not seen yet that I have to see before I do my year end show, and my year end show it will be on January 4th. I have to see The Revenant and The Hateful Eight on the movie side. So those are two big ones. That I have a feeling I might not, my list might be incomplete if I don't see those two. I just have a strong feeling.
Certainly looking at the award nomination, one of those two has already been a big player, and yeah. The other one, he hasn't been yet.
No, it hasn't. Although, I guess everybody loves the way Tarantino writes. That seems to be a given every year.
So. It certainly is, and I've heard some people who have seen it who really seem to like it, and then other people who have described it as long.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's how I felt about Django. There were things about Django that I absolutely love, but that movie's about 45 minutes too long. I mean, and then one of my feelings in seeing it, Dan, was the first time I saw Django Unchained, and I've only seen it once all the way through. That says something about it, too, because a lot of Tarantino movies I've seen repeatedly. That one I've only seen once all the way through, but I've seen, you know, on cable and things, I've seen swatches of it. But the thing about it was, as I was watching it, I had this sense of relief that Tarantino actually wasn't going to be in it. And then in that last half hour, he not only shows up, but he's got a bad Australian accent. I was like, come on. So, anyway.
Well, I don't know if he appears in this one, the Australian accent or not. Or maybe I've heard that he narrates it or something.
Oh, God.
I feel like I might have heard that somewhere. Maybe not in an Australian accent, though. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it, so who knows?
Well, I love the cast. And, I mean, what you know, although Kurt Russell caused a little noise today.
Yeah. Well, what did he do today? He's certainly been causing trouble along the entire promotional tour.
Well, what were some of the... Because the thing that I saw today online that really busted out online was his stance on gun control, and he kind of went after Obama, which is like, you know, an odd thing to do when you're trying to promote a movie. I don't know.
No, he's been doing that consistently, and I think that the text of the movie either is... making people feel like it's okay to sort of poke and prod Kurt Russell about those things, or else he's just in the mood to do it. I mean, he could just be like Donald Trump, and if you give him, you know, something shiny, he'll bite at it. But yes, he's been doing that pretty consistently. He's been fighting with people about gun control, about violence. I think he's been fighting with people about Muslims. It's hard to know if that goes under the heading of no such thing as bad publicity, or if... folks would just assume he'd talk about the movie.
All right. Well, I'm still. I can't wait to see the movie, and I'm looking forward to it. Well, all right, let's talk about TV. Let's talk about the nominations. Well, first, before we get into the nominations, and this ties in, we'll talk about Golden Globes first, and we'll get into the SAGs. I do want to mention the season finale of Scream Queens, and how much I enjoyed. Season one, so much. I had such a great time. It was always a fun hour every week, and I really love the finale. I love the way it it ended. And, you know, since the last time we talked, Dan, they aired an episode that justifiably and finally was directed by Michael Lehman. And when I saw that, you know, in the credits at the beginning, I'm like, of course the guy who directed Heathers, they got the guy who directed Heathers to come in and direct an episode. There seemed a great justification for that. So what did you think of that move?
I thought, well, Michael Lehman's done a lot of TV in recent years. This was just one of those things where you actually could look at, you know, his name and his credits and go, ooh, okay, here's a good match with kind of a classic movie this guy did. But he's been very steady on TV and, you know, often does good stuff. I'm going to have to part ways with you on the finale, though. And you know that I liked the show pretty much all the way along. I thought the finale was kind of brutal. I thought that the finale was 2 hours of people explaining what happened in the 11 previous hours of the show. And I watched the 11 hours of the show previously. I didn't need someone to explain to me in voiceover what happened. I wanted things to be funnier and cooler, and instead it was people monologuing for really 2 hours. I was kind of gouging parts of myself out during the finale, and I had really liked the show up until there.
Well,
I stepped off.
I kind of agree about the first hour of the finale, because the first hour of the finale, it seemed like, okay, this is the end of the Agatha Christie movie, where, you know, because in every Agatha Christie movie, at the end of the Agatha Christie movie, Perrault or whoever is solving the mystery explains it, and then you get to see flashbacks of what happened in the, you know. So that's what I thought they were kind of going for in the first hour, and I wasn't as crazy about it. But in the second hour, when they actually started flashing forward and doing some clever things with time, that I found more interesting. Now, I do agree with you. I don't think that I was happy that the way that, you know, with the way the show ended. But I mean, it wasn't one of the best episodes of the season, certainly. But the first half, I totally agree with you. On the second half, however, I thought it was a little more clever.
I was just a little bit let down. And given how well the show had been going along and how long it was consistently amusing and how long it was consistently sharply written, the finale felt like it was finally, it had become the Ryan Murphy show at that certain point where it just finally went off the rails in that predictable way that eventually it happened. And I had been so admiring of how it had avoided that up until that point.
Okay. But, all right. All right. Well, let's get to the Golden Globe nominations, because we can segue right into that, because my one of my favorite people in the world, who I thought was great on Scream Queens, got a Best Actress in a TV Series comedy nomination, and that's Jamie Lee Curtis, and which I was really surprised by, and also surprised by the category that they put her in.
Well, okay, part of why you were surprised is because last time I was on, I tried talking you out of it, and I tried saying that Emma Roberts was more likely to get the nomination, and you were correct, and I had kind of forgotten how much Golden Globe voters have traditionally liked Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
And so this fits in with their love of Jamie Lee Curtis, whereas voting for Emma Roberts would have fit in with their love of attractive young ingenues so they can get to the awards ceremony. So you were totally right on that. But yes, I did not really think of her as being the lead actress on that show, but there she is.
Yeah, I didn't think I mean, to me, Emma Roberts is the lead on that show. You know, although it's actually an ensemble driven show, but she would be the lead. Well, let's talk about the other. And I'm also surprised at another show that I really like, which is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And Rachel Bloom got a nomination, which I was surprised by. And did you see that one coming at all, Dan?
I think I definitely saw it potentially coming, because the CW proved last year that they can get their people out there for the HFPA when they got Gina Rodriguez, not just a nomination, but a win. So they proved that they were capable of playing that game, which they never had been before. And in a year of really, really lackluster new network shows, there's no question that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was the best received among them. So it was nice to see that recognition, and Rachel Bloom really is extremely talented, and I liked that recognition. I was surprised by the absence of Ellie Kemper in
yeah.
this category. She got a SAG nomination. She didn't get the Emmy nomination last year, but I figured she was a sure thing, because I thought she also kind of fit the Golden Globes profile, and apparently Netflix had too many shows to promote, and so they just couldn't get the HFPA to care about Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and that is minor disappointment.
Yeah. And then the other nominees in that category, the other Monday night CW show, her second nomination after a win last year, Gina Rodriguez gets nominated for Jane the Virgin. Lily Tomlin gets nominated for Grace and Frankie. And your winner is Julia Louis-Dreyfus for Veep, which I have no problem with because I think she's great and the show's great.
But again, given that Gina Rodriguez did win last year, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see her win or to see the CW push Rachel Bloom and maybe Rachel Bloom to get the win. It would not shock me at all if either one of those two won.
All right, so that's your actress in a comedy TV series. And we got some other nominations, the Golden Globes. We'll talk about the SAGs as well and some other things in the world of television. Dan, hang on, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us from The Hollywood Reporter. We're talking TV. We got SAG nominations, Golden Globe nominations to cover as well. It's that time of year, end of the year, awards time. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/NickDShow. Quick break, and we'll come back with more Dan Feinberg TV Talk right here on 720 WGN. All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show. We are live in the Allstate studio here till 5 a.m. on this Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday coming up and all of our regular features as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can also text us at that same number. Check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show and Facebook, facebook.com/NickDShow. My guest is Dan Feinberg. He writes about TV for The Hollywood Reporter, and we're talking about the SAG nominations, the Golden Globe nominations, and much, much more. Okay, Dan, let's talk a little bit more about the Golden Globes, and we can move on to the SAGs and some other stuff. But what were some of the nominations of the Golden Globes that you were surprised, that you were happily surprised by, or that you were, and then the stuff that got snubbed that you're not happy about?
There was much more of the latter than the former. Uh-huh. Honestly, when I got up this morning and actually looked at the nominations, my brain kind of blew up a little bit. This was kind of the extreme of the Hollywood Foreign Press being the Hollywood Foreign Press. There are some categories here that are just absolutely absurd. You know, I look at the drama series category where you have Empire, Game of Thrones, Mr. Robot, Narcos, and Outlander. And that category is just all shiny objects, people getting distracted, ignoring actual good shows on TV. And I mean, it's not to say that Mr. Robot isn't a decent show and that Narcos isn't a decent show and that Outlander doesn't have some things that it does very well and that Empire doesn't have some things that it does relatively well. But you just sort of look at the things that are actually on TV, and you look at Mad Men. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Mad Men, last season. Come on, recognize Mad Men. You look at the season that The Leftovers had in its second season. You look at something like The Americans, which continues to just get snubbed by absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
So much good TV, and that's a category that I don't think reflects any of it. You look at the lead actor in a comedy category, and that's just some goofy stuff in that category. I mean, Aziz Ansari for Master of None, which I think is a good show and a very good performance. Gael Garcia Bernal for Mozart in the Jungle, which is, it's completely and totally a supporting performance, like not even ambiguous. It's
yeah.
Like he's in 5 minutes of an episode, and he pronounces someone's name funny. And that's what his performance is. And I think it's always, every single time he pronounces Lola Kirk's name improperly on that show, I chuckle. But it's not a lead performance, and it's not an award-worthy performance. And goodness gracious, you know, you got Rob Lowe there for The Grinder because the Hollywood Foreign Press loves Rob Lowe ever so much. You've got Patrick Stewart there for Yelling a Lot on Blunt Talk. Just so many strange, shiny new objects, and, you know, so the things that make me happy, Ava Green getting recognition for Penny Dreadful, it's, you know, I didn't love the second season as much as I liked the first, but she's just so good and so committed on such an aggressive scale that it's good to see her recognized. We'll talk in a second about the SAG nominations where Fargo got shut out, so it's good to see Fargo getting recognized, good to see Patrick Wilson and Kirsten Dunst getting nominations. They both deserved them. But then you look at the strange catch-all supporting categories, which are always where the Golden Globes do the silliest things. And Christian Slater for Mr. Robot is just ridiculous there. Alan Cummings for Good Wife is just ridiculous there. Things like that just kind of get stuck in my craw.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at some of these nominations, and you know, I concentrate more when I'm doing my year end stuff here on the movie side, and I'm looking at some of the movie stuff. First of all, boy, that Martian movie was hilarious. Oh man, maybe did I miss musical numbers? I don't know. They used some music. They used music in the movie very well.
He has a lot of disco that he listens to, and he complains extensively about it. So maybe in the mind of the HFPA, complaining about music is the same as singing it and dancing to it. I don't know. No, that's baffling. And it was baffling when they announced it was going to go there. So,
well, it was crazy. Well, let's go through the nominees real quick. TV series, this is Golden Globes. TV series, drama, Empire, Game of Thrones, Mr. Robot, Narcos, and Outlander. TV series, comedy, Casual, Mozart in the Jungle, Orange is the New Black, Silicon Valley, Transparent, and Veep.
That's closer. That one doesn't bother me as much. Mozart in the Jungle doesn't belong there, but it's an okay show. I like seeing Casual getting there, not because I think it's one of the five best comedies on TV, but because I like the idea of Hulu getting to get in on the same game that Amazon and Netflix are playing. Yeah. So, you know, I like people getting to play the game. I like an open playing field, and Casual being there is good for the TV business, even if there are shows that I would much, much rather have on the list.
TV movie or miniseries, American Crime, American Horror Story Hotel, Fargo, Flesh and Bone, and Wolf Hall.
Flesh and Bone is just awful. And
yeah,
and when you think that that's taking a spot that that the HBO miniseries Show Me a Hero could have taken, that kind of grates a little bit, because yeah, Flesh and Bone is awful. But Starz has traditionally done a good job of getting its stuff out to the Golden Globe voters, and they've had a number of things that they've gotten nominated in the movie miniseries category that, you know, mainstream audiences haven't been aware of at all. And so I guess they got the push there, and a little bit strange.
You know, a lot of people, we talk about the Hollywood Foreign Press and how ridiculous a lot of the nominations are, and a lot of people don't even realize the voting and who's voting in the Hollywood Foreign Press. Do you have like a quick explanation as to who the Hollywood Foreign Press is for people?
It's a number of foreign journalists, some of whom don't even cover the things that they're covering on a regular basis. You know, some of them are very much part-time at what they're doing. There are also very, very few of them. There are well under 100, and in terms of who actually votes, the number can be significantly lower. So unlike the Emmys, where you have to somehow woo thousands of people with your stuff, to some degree the Golden Globes become a situation of who can get their people out to this very small group of old reporters who don't really report, and who can win them over. And so that's why basically winning personalities often holds sway with the HFPA. It's questionable. It's a questionable organization that we put so much stock in their decisions, but here we are.
Yeah, I always find it amazing that these people, this small amount of people who are questionable, as you said, are allowed to kind of be the precursor for the Oscars, which I've always found kind of strange. And there are many weird reasons why they nominate people, and I think a lot of them have to do with they want people to show up. They want certain stars to show up. Like, for instance, how in God's name does Will Smith get nominated for Concussion, except that he's Will Smith and they want Will Smith there?
And he goes both ways, because Will Smith is also a guy who does a very good job when he chooses to of putting himself out there and of sort of, you know, pressing the flesh. And,
oh, yeah.
Schmoozing. And so not only is he a personality who people want to vote for, but of course he's Will Smith.
Yeah. Now, have you seen Concussion, Dan?
I have not. I have to see that on Christmas Day. It's the Christmas movie event of the Christmas.
Yeah, They sent me a screener, so I watched it on my couch, which I recommend if you get a chance to watch it on your couch with a fast forward button. That's the way to watch it.
And a helmet on?
Yes, and a helmet on. And then the other one that now I have not watched American Horror Story Hotel because I've done. But Lady Gaga gets nominated for Best Actress for a TV show or a limited series. And I, again, to me, that seems like we want Lady Gaga there.
It is very much of the Hollywood for impressy variety. That was about as predictable a nomination she could have gotten. She's just very much the kind of person who they want to have at their party, and
right.
So they will. And what we say about her as an actual actress, I think she holds the screen relatively well. And I also quit on American Horror Story, not necessarily because I thought it was so awful, but because episode length started getting up into the 90-minute range, including commercials, and I don't have the patience for that.
Now, you know, you talked about this the last time, about how, you know, shows, specifically shows on FX, are allowed to kind of go an hour and 15, hour and 20, whatever. Have you noticed that's happening this season on Top Chef?
Top Chef has often gone those extra 10 or 15 minutes, especially at the start of the season. It's something that the show has done in the past. Now, the fact that they had a double premiere last week is you know, so much that they have to cover. But yeah, no, they've done that for the 75-minute episodes. I think that everyone is kind of following the FX model because it becomes increasingly hard for a network to say to a creative person, you know, you have to come in at 43 minutes. And then the person says, but FX, all of their shows get to come in at 55 or 60 minutes.
Right.
Why don't we just go or Netflix where it's whatever they want?
Yeah.
Why can't we just do that?
Yeah.
So I think we're going to probably see more of that.
I want to talk a little bit about Top Chef in a little bit. I did not see last night's episode. Okay, all right, but I did see the two-part finale. Look at that. I'm looking forward to the finale already.
It's already over.
I want to get to Top Chef and some of the other things TV related. But we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk SAG.
Sure.
The SAG Awards in terms of TV and, of course, movies. I have to say, I was shocked that Sylvester Stallone didn't get nominated for Creed.
It seemed like a surprise because everyone sort of liked the story of it, and then you're looking and it only got one Golden Globe nomination, so maybe everyone got a little bit prematurely excited about the idea that this could be another Rocky and that it could win all these awards.
Yeah.
And now maybe everyone needs to tune it down a little bit, tone it down and go, okay, maybe Stallone will get a nomination and that will be nice recognition.
I love the movie. I really love the movie and I think Stallone is great in it. I did not, however, think it would get nominated for anything but supporting actor. Like after I saw the film, I'm like, well, you know, he'll get the nomination and possibly win it because it's a great story and he's terrific in the movie. But I wasn't, even though I love the film, I wasn't under any kind of delusion that it would get nominated for anything more than, you know, supporting actor.
I think that it's a nice idea to want to salute Ryan Coogler. I think he's he's the kind of talent that the town should be supporting. I think that the cinematography is fantastic.
You've seen it, right, Dan?
Yes, I have.
The first fight scene. I mean, that first boxing scene is so beautifully shot in seemingly one take, kind of. But it's like really a beautiful, like when that scene was over, I was like, wow, this guy, has actually filmed one of the best boxing scenes I've ever seen in a movie ever.
I think it's a very solid movie. I think that Michael B. Jordan is fantastic. I think there are a lot of really good things about the movie. I don't know that I personally think it's, you know, best picture-y, but I like the story outside of the story on it. And, and seems like maybe some of that momentum has slowed down the past 2 days.
I would think so too. But I'm a big fan of it. And one of the maybe because I was just so surprised at how good it was. Like I kind of went in thinking, all right. And then about halfway through, I'm like, damn, this is a good movie. Anyway. All right. Hang on, Dan, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to talk more TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. We've got the SAG nominations and a couple of other TV things that we'll get to with Dan right here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studios here on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. Continuing our conversation with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter, and we're talking about TV. He joins us every few weeks regularly here on the show. We love having Dan on. And it's award season. We talked about the Golden Globes, and now we're going to talk a little bit about SAG. Overall, Dan, how did you feel about the SAG TV nominations?
They were boring, and then the things that were confusing about them were made sort of understandable by hearing about a rule decision that they made this year. Basically, I looked at the nominations. My reaction was, wait a second, where the heck are Fargo, where is American Horror Story, and where is American Crime in the movie categories, movie miniseries categories? And the answer is that for reasons that are pretty questionable, SAG decided that they were all going to be drama series, despite the fact that all three are being submitted as movies, miniseries for every other awards organization. And so that's why Fargo got shut out, or that's why one would explain that Fargo got shut out. I'm still ticked off that Fargo didn't get an ensemble acting nomination, but at least it kind of explains, because probably people looked at their ballot and said, this doesn't belong, and just didn't vote for it. So it's a bad decision on SAG's part and leads to very, very boring and predictable nominations for the most part, and then really peculiar nominations like, oh, look, there's Bill Murray for Netflix's Very Murray Christmas as a nominee for Best Actor in a Movie or Miniseries, where my reaction was, oh, okay, don't understand that.
It didn't seem like a movie to me. I mean, it's very enjoyable. I enjoyed the hell out of it, but didn't seem like a movie, and it's certainly not a miniseries.
And whatever it is, how much acting would you say is going on there?
No, not much, which is strange. An ensemble for the drama series, Downton Abbey, Game of Thrones, Homeland, House of Cards, and Mad Men.
I'm glad to see Mad Men back, because Mad Men and Jon Hamm had both fallen out of the nominations last year for no discernible reason, and they both got brought back for the final season and all of that, and that was good. And given that the Golden Globes the next day snubbed Mad Men for drama series, it makes SAG look a little bit better on this. But still, the ongoing Downton Abbey thing is peculiar. The ongoing House of Cards thing is peculiar. The ongoing Homeland thing is peculiar. And then you just look at the number of shows that aren't there that probably should be, again, like Fargo, again, like Leftovers, again, like The Americans, again, like Justified. And Not good choices, in my opinion.
Ensemble in a comedy series, The Big Bang Theory. Oh, and that huge ensemble of Key and Peele. I guess that was a way of getting around picking one or the other, right? I don't know. So, Modern Family, Orange is the New Black, Transparent, and Veep. Now, you know where I stand on Key and Peele. I mean, I absolutely adore that show, and I think they're geniuses. But they don't have a chance in hell, because there's only two of them, right?
They don't, and I don't know that they deserve to. I also love those two guys and the things that they do on that show, but there's no stretch of the imagination under which, to me, a two-person ensemble is, quote-unquote, an ensemble.
I agree.
And then you compare it to the things that didn't get nominated, whether it's something like Blackish, whether it's something like Silicon Valley. There are options. Mm-hmm. And they decided, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt would be a fine option. It is a show that has an ensemble cast as opposed to two people playing many, many roles and being awesome.
Yeah.
But, not a good choice there,
okay.
Really.
All right. The actor in a drama series, you think Jon Hamm's going to win it?
I feel like that's the emotional momentum, because it was such a good moment at the Emmys when he won. It was such a satisfying moment.
Yeah.
But, of course, now that he's won his Emmy, I'm not sure that I'm going to get as invested in any of these other things that he either is or isn't going to win. I mean, he actually did win a Golden Globe. He just won it the year that things were on strike, and so it wasn't televised. So I'm not going to get invested there. And if he wins here, it would be nice.
Okay.
I think he would deserve to.
All right. Before we let you get out of here, I mentioned a little bit earlier, I mentioned Top Chef, and I've been watching that show since the beginning. The dude from L.A. is your douchebag so far. There has to be a douchebag out of the gate. And the guy from L.A. who wears the bun and thinks he knows everybody and used grass off the ground in one of his recipes, that guy is your douchebag extraordinaire so far.
I usually find that it's very hard to choose because every single cast of Top Chef feels like the same assortment of 15 people with different names.
I know. You have the lesbians with tattoos.
Oh, well, always at least three or four of those. You have the bearded guys who like cooking with meat. There's usually two or three of them. You can usually find one Asian guy who doesn't want to be identified as cooking only Asian and then ends up only winning when he cooks Asian food. It really is almost the same people. And then you get confused when they actually completely arbitrarily bring back someone like Grayson.
Right.
And you're like, oh. She literally was on this show before.
Yeah. That's not a Grayson type. That's Grayson.
That's Grayson. Wait, yeah. Why is Grayson back? And why is no one commenting on the fact that she's back?
It makes no sense.
Was this what prompted them to do this?
Yeah, I know.
Also, she came out really badly in the first two episodes.
Terrible.
I like Grayson a lot.
Yeah.
She couldn't have looked worse.
She looked terrible in it, and I like her too, but wow. Anyway, I love that show, man. And I've loved it since episode one. Harold is still my Top Chef and will always be my Top Chef.
I need to think about who. I feel like my Top Chef is whichever bearded guy who likes cooking meat each
right.
year. I find most entertaining.
There you go. All right. Well,
they don't have names.
Okay, Dan. Next time we talk to you, it'll be the new year. So have some great holidays for you, and also when we come back, we'll talk. Maybe like after we'll have you on like after the Golden Globes at some point. Get your thoughts on that.
Or sooner to talk top tens, whatever works.
Yeah, absolutely. What sooner to talk top tens? Fine with me, Dan. The sooner the better. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Okay, Dan. Take care.
Yep.
There you go. Dan Feinberg writes about TV for the Hollywood Reporter. Terrific writer, smart guy, knows TV very, very well. And have a great time always talking to him. So we'll talk to him soon. All right, we got to take a quick break here. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.